Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. We're alive, so that's good news.
So, fuck you, haters.
Hey, for anybody who is looking for us to be performing down at South by Southwest,
yeah,
guess what?
We were booked and now we're busy.
We were bumped. We were bumped by the coronavirus. Guys, South by Southwest, newsflash, done.
Winning.
Oh my god, I think we've gone stir crazy.
Yeah, I haven't left the apartment in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I'm in quarantine.
This is last man on earth.
Yeah. I was very worried that we wouldn't have a guest this week because of the coronavirus.
Yeah.
Because one of our guests canceled because of the coronavirus.
But that's okay.
It's okay.
That's all right. Everybody on this podcast is still alive. And for anybody out there who's still alive and interested in watching these episodes,
mm-hmm.
great news. You can go to youtube.com/itsthereal and watch episodes with people like Jadakiss
mm-hmm.
and Jesse Reyes
mm-hmm.
and Royster59.
Keep going.
And Rick Ross.
Talk about it.
And Jeezy.
Make sure that people hear it.
And Cameron.
Let them know.
And Russ.
Keep going.
And Corey Towns.
I don't have any more good ad-libs.
And the list goes on and on.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Real is now on YouTube, and here's what we need from you guys. Subscribe.
It's very easy. All you have to do is just press the button below.
Yeah, fucking Lysol your keyboard and press subscribe.
Subscribe below!
We're trying to get to 10,000 subscribers.
We're very
close.
At
that point, Jeff, what do we get?
A prize.
What's that prize?
$30.
Guys, help us get that $30.
30 bucks. We really need it. We're 30 bucks short of rent this month.
Let's get to 10K.
YouTube.com/itsthereal.
That's the one. Jeff, who's on the podcast today?
Graf, who does not have the coronavirus.
Graf from Queens, New York, who has a new project out called
The Oracle 3.
Shout out to Graf and shout out to our guy, Green Lantern.
DJ Green Lantern.
This is the third of their series.
Yep, that's why it's called The Oracle 3.
That's right. Wait,
hold on. I'm sorry. South by Southwest
is calling.
It's the hotel saying that. Thank you for waiting, Jeffrey. I have now called the hotel for you and did my best to resolve your concern. I know you have waited for a long time. Yes, I have waited for a long time. I've been on hold for 2 hours now.
That's the update?
That's the update.
No, like yes or no?
This guy has been waiting to call the hotel for about half an hour.
All right. Graf was on the podcast today, and Graf came through to talk not just about his artistry and not just about what it takes to, you know what, be resilient over a decade plus in the music industry. What are they saying?
The good news is that we have canceled without any penalty.
Okay.
But there's another ... coming.
Okay. Graf is on the podcast today, as I was saying.
Uh-huh.
And Graf talks about his artistry. Graf talks about making it through the music industry. But also talks about some real-life shit. And I'm talking about, like, the realest of real-life shit.
Yeah. Horrible, horrible things that he had to overcome and is still dealing with the trauma of today.
And it has made him a... What do they say?
We're not going to interrupt this now.
We just did.
All right.
Listen,
guys. They said that we're processing the cancellation.
This is a great episode. Graf is a great dude. Shout out to Graf. Shout out to Royce. Shout out to Bun. Graf has been on their two projects. They're on his new project. Go stream that everywhere where you can stream it. And enjoy this episode. I think it gives you a new appreciation of New York rap and Queens rap. And Graf rap. Jeff, when do you want to get into it?
Right after I shout out all of our producers who have contributed to our Patreon, patreon.com/itsthereal. Patreon.com/itsthereal is where you can go to support It's The Real, that's us, and all of our pursuits. So here we go. I want to shout out Andres Carmona, Darren W., Obi Marroquin, Armando Gallegos, Devon Overstreet, Jeremy Corrales, Felix Moya, Jaswinder Verdi, Lauren Reeves, Eric Gonzalez, Jeffrey Oreza, Jamal Jamot, Daniel David, and Torian Blakeney.
Jeff, when do you want to get into it?
Right now.
Yo, what up? It's Eric, a.k.a. Robin, while his friends watching, a.k.a. Fix Thieves.
Yo, what up? It's Jeff, a.k.a. Spitting Your Grill, a.k.a. Shish Kebab.
Hey, my name's Graf, y'all.
Yes, yeah, your third favorite podcast to waste time with. It's the real. Graf, what's happening?
Chilling, man. What's good? What's
Everything good? What's is good. Yo, thanks for coming over. Congratulations on your new project.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Before we started, we were talking about hard drives. And you said you had a great hard drive story.
Great, but painful.
Okay.
God bless Jay Dilla. Mm-hmm. When he was around, we were supposed to link up and do some records and shit, right? So we only spoke on the phone. We never met in person. And he emailed me 4 fire beats. And I downloaded them. I'm hyped to do it. Like, oh, shit, it's going to be crazy. I put it on my hard drive. And then I wrote to, like, one of them. Then he passed away.
Oh.
Then the fucking hard drive crashed. And I never got to record them shits.
What happened?
The hard drive crashed.
Just like it just died of natural causes?
Natural causes. The hard drive fucking had a heart attack. I don't even know.
God damn.
Stopped working. And I had 4 smokers from Jay Dilla.
How did you guys connect in the first place?
Through 88 Keys.
Shout out to 88 Keys.
Who did your first single?
Yeah, 88 Keys. That's Shout out man. To you, brother. That's my dog right there. Yeah. So we connected through him. And we were only like talking through the phone and shit like that. And we never had a chance to actually get together in the studio and work. And a fucking hard drive crashed.
God damn.
With 4 smokers that the world would never hear.
Yeah.
Word.
Who can we blame on, you know?
Jesus.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
I don't think that we're the right guys to do
that.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Feels like.
You can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who do we want to blame, though? Who do you want to blame?
I don't know. Trump.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Fuck Trump.
Yeah. Let's go back to the very, very beginning. Where are you originally from?
Jamaica, Queens, and Jamaica the Island. My whole family, I'm actually Jamaican.
Right on.
And then Jamaica, Queens.
And what was growing up in Jamaica, Queens like?
Like any other hood, man. It's bad. Motherfuckers. You know what's sad? Like, recently, probably last year, 12:30 in the daytime, somebody got shot and killed in front of my car.
Jesus.
Like, last year. I was like, damn. A nigga still killing each other out here like this?
So you walked out and, like, there was, like...
It was a crime scene. I couldn't even walk to my car. It was parked for, like, 4 days. Like, he died, like, by my back tire. I was like, maybe I should sell this car. Maybe it's bad car. I don't fucking
know. Yeah. I know this is, like, the least concerning part of this, but, like, how did you get around?
Oh, I have a Jeep.
Yeah.
So I just took that shit.
Yeah.
But the car was dead-ass stuck with cones around it for 4 days. My aunt was on the news talking. I was like, man, you take your ass back in the house. You ain't see nothing.
Yeah.
Go inside them. You know, I'm Jamaican. She's like, go outside them. You know, they came outside. Go inside. We sleep. You saw nothing.
Yeah.
So what did you want to do as a kid?
I wanted to be a doctor, actually. Yeah, I was going to St. John's, and I was going to medical school. I was going to be a fucking doctor.
Wait, you were going to medical school?
Somehow this hip-hop thing got
in the way. Yeah. Wait, you wanted to be a doctor. How far along did that go?
I went to college for like 3 years studying physical science.
Wow.
And I was dead-ass going to be a doctor. And then somehow this hip-hop shit got in the way.
Yeah, but where does the medical stuff like come in? Do you have any relatives who were doctors? And you were like, that's what I want to do?
Yeah, my cousin is a chiropractor in Miami. He was actually Bob Marley's chiropractor. And then my cousin is Jack Hure, the reggae singer. He was his chiropractor, and he did a bunch of like celebrities and shit.
Wow.
And I just wanted to go into medicine. Word.
How big was your family growing up?
My family's huge.
Yeah?
Huge family, all poor as shit. Like my mother has 9 siblings.
Oh.
And my grandmother has, I don't even know how many. My family's big as shit.
If I asked you to name all your cousins...
Don't ask me. Not gonna happen.
It'd be impossible.
Not going to go well. I don't like it. And all her siblings had kids. I'm the only child. But I'm the only one.
Yeah.
All of her siblings, like my aunts and uncles, all of them got mad kids. So my shit is stupid. It's like a village.
Yeah.
So did your mom wanted you to be a doctor? Is that like the typical like immigrant story where it's just like
Everybody's mom wants their son to be a doctor or a lawyer. Be a doctor or a lawyer. So I was gonna be a doctor. And it's funny because I was doing an internship in a hospital and I was like, I don't like sick people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want to do this shit. But I was going to do it because I just felt like I was supposed to. You know, a college dude and you go to school, you know what the fuck you're doing with your life.
Yeah.
You just do what you feel you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
So I was doing what I thought I was supposed to do.
So you went to St. John's.
Yeah.
Did you commute there? Where did you stay on campus?
St. John's is in Jamaica, Queens.
Yeah.
So I could damn near walk there from my crib.
Yeah.
So
you were already living there.
I was already there. I was on campus, but at my crib.
Was there any thought that maybe you would go to like another school, another city, anywhere else?
I didn't even apply for anywhere else. I just wanted to go to St. John's.
So your shit was just going to stay super local?
Yeah. I'm going to St. John's. Fuck it. I only thing I applied for another school. I applied for that, got in, and that was that.
Yeah. So an only child growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Were you super close with your folks?
Me and my mom was like this.
Yeah.
My dad wasn't around like that. And then he kind of came back into my life when I was like 15, 16.
How was that?
It was cool because I felt like we were really bonding and getting close to each other. And then, unfortunately, he got murdered across the street from where I was staying at.
How did you find out?
I saw it. Unfortunately.
You saw your dad get murdered in front of you?
Yeah. And the human brain is so ill that I don't remember any of it. None of it. I don't remember. It feels like I saw a picture. I don't fucking know. It feels like it didn't really happen. Even to this day, I don't think I really dealt with it. It doesn't feel like it actually happened.
How old were you when
like
this 15, happened?
15, 16.
So this is right after you guys started to reconnect?
Really, yeah. Right after we really started to bond and reconnect. And after it happened, my brain blocked it out. I went to school the next day and nothing happened. Everybody's like, are you okay? My only recollection of what happened that whole entire week is what people told me happened. I don't remember shit. Like, I don't. Your brain is interesting what it does to keep you safe.
Yeah.
I don't remember a thing. To this day, I don't remember shit. It feels like I only remember what I read in the papers. People tell me. I don't remember anything. Dead ass.
Not the funeral. Not.
I remember the funeral. I remember the court. I went to court and when they convicted the killer, who was my fucking neighbor, which is crazy. I remember that. I remember wanting to jump over the fucking banister and kill that nigga. I remember that. And that's it. I don't remember anything else. He shot him and his friend. And my dad didn't see it coming. He died with a smile on his face with his hands in his pocket. His friend tried to run and got hit in the back. And I remember the newspaper article writing that shit like it was a fucking comic story. I was like, this shit didn't go like this. This is bullshit. I remember that, and I remember the court and the funeral.
Wait, you mean like a superhero sort of thing?
They just made it a story. That's what the media does. Like, I remember that was my first experience realizing how full of shit in general media is. I was like, they made it a super story. I was like, the fuck is this shit? This is not it. But
does it give you, as a 15, 16-year-old, 17-year-old in that time, does it give you an idea of how like quick things can turn?
Absolutely. It makes you value things more. It also makes you numb. Like at that time, I didn't feel shit for a long time. I think I'm detached from emotion, period. I got a shitload of issues that I still got to work out.
You know, you're 15. How do your friends react? You said that they were like, you know, checking in on you and everything.
I never spoke about it until music. Like Damage Is Done, that song was like the first time I fucking spoke about it. And then when I listened back to those old records, I was like, damn, I was angry. Like the way I describe the occurrence is just a lot of anger and aggression. Like that's why somebody the other day asked me if I would make a Damage Is Done part two, and I was like, nah, I couldn't. I'm not as angry. I'm grown, still fucking nuts, but I'm not an angry kid. I was super detached from emotion back then. Super like not in tune with what I was feeling with most things except anger. I understand why motherfuckers be so mad, because you're so mad at so many things that happen in your life, you don't know how to express it. And for me, the music was definitely an outlet. To this day, I don't think I ever really verbally expressed true emotion about it, except for the music. Like my mom said it, like, yo, you only talk about it in the music. You don't say shit. Are you okay? I was like, probably not, but you know.
So your guys' relationship in that moment like had to become like super close.
My mom's?
Yeah.
We were always close though. Like my mom is like, it's my only child, so you know how that goes. And I'm Jamaican, so just culturally, family, mothers, sons and shit, they just really tight knit, you know what I mean? So we were always close.
Did you guys move
from where we
after
were?
That?
That was my aunt's house. She stayed there. He got murdered across the street. It was the neighbor that lived in that house. My dad was visiting the dude. It wasn't even beef like that. I'm like, the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
So, she stayed there for a couple and then retired and moved to Florida. I'm still on my side of Queens, for real.
So you finished off high school and you have this. Are you driven to go and live the rest of your life? Or, like, who are you in that
time? In that moment?
Yeah.
I think I was see, at that time too, you're growing into a man and figuring out what kind of man you want to be, who you want to be. I'm still in the hood. I'm like the best of both worlds. I'm like hood, but I'm still kind of balanced with smart nerd shit. So I'm like in the middle and figuring it out. And around that time, I think I went all the way left. I was all the way in the street and just playing with guns and all this other shit at that time because I just didn't value life the same. And I felt, not my own life, I didn't feel suicidal. I just felt like I would have done anything at that time.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
I didn't feel connected to most things, and I understand that now looking back as an adult living in it. I just felt more reckless.
Yeah,
like I remember beefing with dudes in my neighborhood one time and literally being in a shootout and feeling like I couldn't get hit. Like they're shooting at the car, I'm shooting back, and I just remember it felt like a video game. It didn't feel like I could get hurt in that situation at all. I just remember that feeling, like it didn't feel like something could actually happen. Shit didn't feel real. I'm shooting back. Didn't feel like I could go to jail.
Right.
Didn't feel like any consequence would happen. Just didn't. I was detached from the shit.
Apart from that, was there any way for you to express yourself? Was there? Did you write? Did you like rap? Did you?
I was writing then too. I was rapping then. But I wasn't talking about that per se. But I was just rapping, and I think that in general was just therapeutic.
Yeah. What were you rapping about?
Just shit that I'm seeing, that's going on in my neighborhood, and I guess my feelings are coming out in some kind of way, but it was still witty and shit like that, so it wasn't really emotionally driven, but it was just the fact that I'm writing about shit, just writing, you know what I mean? Like, Nas was the first rapper that influenced me to actually want to write, because I realized, besides the fact that he's immensely talented and Illmatic is fucking retarded, he was the first rapper that I realized was rapping about the shit that was happening in the neighborhood. Like, I'm like, oh, it sounds like he's looking out his window and rapping about the shit he's seeing. And I'm like, I see the same shit outside of my window. So I started to write about what I was seeing and feeling through the music that way.
Did it mean much more because he's from Queens too?
Probably, yeah. I identify with him for that reason as well. Yeah, definitely. But without the music, I don't know. I think anytime you go through something traumatic to that extent, you have to find an outlet to express it or you're going to be a fucking basket case.
So where did you see music going at that point? Or was it just sort of like something on the side?
I was just doing it to do it.
Were you graph?
Yeah, but I was graph from art. I spray paint and draw and do shit like that. So it was really? Like it was like graphics, graph dash X.
Yeah.
I would spray paint and draw shit. Like I wish I brought my drawings. That was nice.
Yeah.
I was just as good at art as I was at putting words together. Like it was, if I got a scholarship for fucking to like the Brooklyn Museum for art, and it was supposed to be like a college credit, but I fucked it up because I didn't take it serious. Because
you were nice at art and you were gonna go into medicine.
Yeah.
Man.
I went into medicine.
Yeah.
I went to St. John's for physical science. Like I was going to fucking pursue medicine and be a doctor of some sort and do that.
What's something that you were not good at as a kid?
Was I not good at?
Yeah. Like, I'm not good at, like, darts.
Shit. What was I not good at?
Is that true?
I'm not good at darts.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can hit the wall.
I never played darts, but shit. I mean, I played a lot of sports, and I was good at a lot of them. I got trophies in soccer, baseball.
No, what were you actually not good at?
What did I suck at? I fucking sucked at what?
Were you a good driver? Like, were you?
I was a good driver.
Mm-hmm. By the way, I was so not good at sports, or I like, didn't do any sports, that I bought all these trophies on eBay so I would feel like a winner. Which is like one of my favorite bits that nobody sees.
Yeah, but it is an actual thing.
Yeah,
that's hilarious. Yeah. What the fuck did I suck at in school?
Or in life?
I mean, I'm sure I suck at a bunch of shit.
Wait. Only child, were you bad at sharing?
Ooh.
I'm probably still bad. I always hear selfish. You're so selfish, fucking guy.
Where would you tag shit?
On walls, wherever I could.
Yeah.
Bathroom stalls, fucking train, bus.
Did you put your block as well? Or
so it was just like my name. I would write Graph X and just... highlighted with like a crown and shit like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I used to love that shit.
What was the most dangerous like place? Like, did you hang off like a ledge or anything?
I never went that hard, nah. When I see taggers do that shit, I respect it. Because I never did that crazy shit. Like, inside the train, nah. I'm like, fuck that. Yeah, I'm bugging. But I respect it when I see it. But I ain't doing that extra shit.
Yeah, like, bathroom wall is fine. But
cool.
Yeah.
But
fourth floor story? No.
Nah, I ain't hanging off of shit.
Bridges? No.
None of that. But... just walls and shit like that. Wherever I just felt like it was a space to do it. Oh, really? I drew a lot. Like, I bought canvases, and then I got into drawing on clothes, like leather jackets and book bags and shit.
That's dope.
Yeah, like, as a matter of fact, I was going to, recently, too, I was going to get a, you know, Art Basel in Miami.
Yeah.
I was going to rent a space, curate it, and just hang my own shit up, because I'd paint on mannequins and leather jackets and shit.
That would have been dope.
I'm probably going to still do that.
But yeah.
I just didn't, they were wanting so much money for it. I was like, man, fuck y'all. Yeah. I'm not even trying to make a profit. I just want to be a part of your art community, sir. But that shit was mad expensive.
So you graduate high school, you go to St. John's, you're going to get into medicine. You're still rapping in college?
Yeah. You know what's crazy? What? That's where the whole buzz and interest to actually take the career series happened at St. John's, because I had a rapping partner back then, right? And he's always like, yo, let's do the talent show. And I was like, nah, we never going to win that shit in this school. Because that school was like the rock bands and all the white music was winning. I was like, there's no way hip hop is going to win here. I was like, why even do it? I was like, nah, he's like, come on, we're going to win, man. Let's do this shit. I was like, fuck it, let's do it. And we fucking won.
So you guys were a group?
Yeah. Not a group, but a group. We were just rapping together and shit.
Got it. And you wouldn't write together?
Yeah, we would write together. It was like my man. We hang out, drink, smoke, I was on a block, all that stupid shit.
Yeah.
I did all my bad shit with him. You know what I'm saying? And then we started rapping together, and we won the fucking talent show at St. John's. Then at that point, I was like, hold on, this is a real thing. This could really be a real thing. And then I was battle rapping with dudes on like BCAP Public Access TV at that time. And Busta Rhymes got wind of it. He started watching it. I forgot how he got
in contact. He does love battle raps.
Yeah. This is way before, like, it's like Smack DVD era
shit.
And somehow he got in contact with me. And I forgot how. Somebody at school said, yo, some Busta Rhymes trying to be. I was like, what? I'm just going to school. I'm not even thinking about no industry shit. And I ended up working with him some kind of way. And then I went to his studio. Started fucking with him and then following him around on their tours and shit like that. And then I started working with Hank Shockley and writing for different artists. I started to get into the music industry without shopping demos and shit like that. It just started to really happen.
Yeah, organic, and, like, you know, buzz, yeah.
Yeah, and I couldn't balance the music shit in school.
Oh, I'm sure.
Like, I was falling asleep in class. I wasn't turning in shit. I got all incompletes my third year because I couldn't balance both of them shits. I was like, there's no way I could do both. So I was like, fuck the school shit.
Well, when you first meet Bus,
right?
Do you go in there and play the wall, or are you just like, you know, puff your chest up and you're like, yeah, I'm just on the same level too?
Nah. I was a fan. I was young. I was fucking like 18, 19. I was still in school. I was like, oh shit, it's Busta Rhymes. I'm looking at this dude, jewelry, all this shit. He's a superstar. That was my first encounter with somebody in the business. So I was like, oh shit. And he was talking to me like, yo, I'm a fan of your shit. Y'all crazy. Da da da. So that shit was like mind blowing at that age. I understand how kids get on young and lose it.
Also, straight up, nothing like a pep talk from Busta Rhymes.
He got on the phone with my mom's like, what do you feed this boy? He's spitting fire. Word to my mother. I'm like, this is crazy. Like, it was like late night. Like, call your mom right now. I said, Mama Graf, what you feeding this boy? He's spitting fire. Dead ass. I was like, oh shit.
Did you do different. The patois for your mom?
He said, who, Busta?
Yeah.
I don't remember. My mother's mad Jamaican.
Yo. So, I mean, so is Busta.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. He probably did. I don't know. I was blown. I was like, yo. Yeah.
She's like, oh, I'm feeding them oxtail. Yeah.
That shit was crazy. Yeah.
So you link up with him. You go on the road with him too?
Kind of, sort of. Not like an official tour. We were like following him around and shit. Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't balance that shit in school. I was like,
what do you think he respected about you? Like your voice, your pen, your just like energy?
I think it was the whole thing. Just he respects the bars. He's like a fan of rap.
Yeah.
Him and Clark Kent were the first two people that I met in this business that they give a fuck about the culture.
Shout out to Clark Kent.
They give a fuck about bars.
Yo.
And so my influences early on were great. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I used to come to Clark Kent's studio earlier around that same time and just rap. He'd be like, just rap, just go. Battle dudes and just rap and just. The feeling was great. They would just all want to just say, just go, just rap. They couldn't get enough of just the hip hop.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So that molded how I felt about the shit too. Then when I saw it becoming real, I'm like, hold on. Like, this is a real thing. Because I wasn't shopping demos and shit and chasing. I was going to school. I didn't think I was going to be a famous rapper.
Well, what was your first check?
Probably working with 88 Keys. We did that record, Keep It Gangsta, and his manager gave me a check for the whole thing. I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. He's like, hey, you know, I give you this check. You sign all these rights to this record.
Yeah.
I was like, well, that money right there, right now? Fuck it. It's yours. first time I got dirked. But I, at that age, I'm like, oh, so I signed this paper and take this money right now? That's what you're trying to tell me? He's like, yeah. I was like, maybe I should read it. Maybe not.
Yeah. So
fucking
if you're
18.
I'm if like, you're 18, 19, 20, are you on your own? Are you just running around to go to, you know, each situation and you're just like, man, I'm here to work. I'm here to like connect.
You just at that age, you're just working and loving the fucking music and you're fucking young and stupid. It's about weed, liquor, women, your friends, rap. It's like, it's not, yeah. It doesn't feel like a job. It's fun.
Yeah.
So I made that record in fun at 88's crib in the studio, in the crib studio. And this dude gives me a check for this shit. I'm like, this is fantastic. That's how you get jerked as a kid, because you don't know what you're doing at all. I didn't know what the fuck I was doing.
Right.
I signed whatever the fuck it was. Like, are you gonna marry Brett right now?
Yeah.
Straight to the block with this. Peace. You feel like you won at the time, but it's like, you know, people will buy your rights. There's no, for no problem. I'll buy a motherfucker rights. No problem. That's just that's the nature of business.
Were you recording stuff too, or were you just writing?
I was recording.
Rapping. Yeah.
Like, me and 88 were making shitloads of music. I'm sure we made an album. I don't remember everything, but we made a bunch of shit that we released and shit that you probably still got that we never released.
So, thinking back at this time, you're burning CDs, you're like,
definitely,
you know,
tapes, all that shit.
Yeah. Were you looking for representation? Were you looking to, you know, hopefully sign with the label? Was there any plan that you had
at that time when shit started to get real? Yeah, because I signed by 88. It was like a production thing. So
right.
We were like, I don't want to say business partners. I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. But I signed with 8 as a, I guess, an artist in a production situation. So at this time, once you start signing shit, paperwork, and recording for real, and mixing and mastering and learning the business, then shit gets real. And even through 88, I met Kanye. And me and Kanye got cool. I used to go to Kanye's crib and make records.
When he was living in New Jersey.
In Jersey City, yeah. What's crazy, you know what Kanye doesn't know? He taught me how to count bars and has no fucking idea.
You were just going on for like forever.
A billion bars. So he played a beat and
recorded. That's Clark's fault, right? Because he's just like, yo, keep going. Like,
I just didn't know. They probably didn't know. I didn't know. I'm like, I'm just rapping and shit. So I'm at Kanye's crib. We were cutting records and shit. And he was recording this one joint. And I remember rapping for like maybe 50 fucking bars. And he was like, you know, 16 bars is like way back there. I was like, where at?
Yeah, when does the hook come in? Yeah.
So when he showed me where it was at, I didn't know how to count. I just felt where 16 was. I was like, oh, all right, I got you. So from that, I started to understand how to feel out with 16 bars. And because I didn't want to admit that I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. I was that's wrong. I got this, my nigga. Just right there. See, I know. So then I did it again. I was like, oh, okay, that's 16 bars. Got it. Because I had too prideful to admit it then. But yeah, so he taught me how to count bars. I don't even fucking know it.
Were you rolling around with anybody, or was it just you going to all these places by yourself?
Mainly me. What's up with my friends? Probably with some of my friends, but mainly just me. Like, I used to go to Kanye's crib dolo.
Yeah.
Or bring girls, whatever the fuck. This is like back when he was H to the Izzo Kanye. You know what I'm saying?
And that's so when the tattoo still had to be like filled in.
Yeah.
He was actually, he got the tattoo then when I was around him. Like, I know him. Like, we cool. Like,
yeah.
Were you meeting like GLC and like Consequence? And
all them niggas. Yeah, yeah. All those guys. Yeah. We all cool. Consequence was from around my way. He's from the north side of Queens, but like 5 minutes from where I stay. GLC, I know him. All those dudes was around then. Yeah. I don't know if I met Ron Festo, but the rest of them, they was all around. Like, yeah. So when I see Kanye go on rants and do passionate shit, like, I know him. He's a passionate dude.
Yeah.
He's not acting. He's not joking. He's fucking dead ass serious. He always been like that. He used to go on rants back then, like, why can't I buy a sweater that costs $2,000 if I like it? Like, buy that shit, my nigga. Buy that shit, bro. Like, and this is like, we used to argue about fame and rap back then, because he was like, I want to be a rapper, but he wanted to be a rapper for the face value, and because he had something to offer.
Sure.
But he really wanted the face value. And I said, like, man, I could have the same girl as Jay-Z with that bread. I don't need no fucking fame. He was like, nah, son, you need the fame. He just it's just a mad shit. But he's him. He's so him. He ain't acting.
What were you wearing back then?
$2,000 sweaters.
Were you wearing like XXX t-shirts?
XXX iceberg, like, sweaters.
Oh, iceberg.
First I was a low head, all polo, and then
where you and 88 connected. Got it.
Right. Okay, yeah. I was all polo back then. And then when iceberg came around, I started to trade polo pieces for iceberg and get into that.
Yeah.
That's when I started hustling, you know, all of the street shit, because iceberg was $500 sweaters.
Yeah.
I'm fucking 18.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, guess I'm going to have to sell these drugs because I'm wearing sweaters.
Well, was anybody in medical school dressed as well as you?
Back then, nah. in college, I was like, St. John's is a fashion show. It was probably me and this other dude that were like competing for the number one cool guy space. And we were like rivals. All the girls were like, I don't like each other. Fuck that nigga. You fly to me.
Well, what'd your mom think in this whole time too? Because like, I'm sure she was like, my son is going to medical school and he's going to be a doctor. And then you're like, I am going to go hang out with Busta and 88 and Kanye.
She looked at it as failure at first.
Did you tell her?
Nah, I just couldn't.
You let it be a surprise.
Yeah, a rude awakening as a surprise. Yeah. She was not feeling that shit at all in the beginning. She was tight because she used to brag about, oh, my son's going to St. John's. He's a college student and blah, blah, blah. I had my first car. I'm driving to campus. All this little fake bougie shit. Fresh out the hood and bringing all these ghetto niggas to my school and all that. But I was doing well. My grades is always good. Like, yeah, I was just always a smart kid. So she was proud of that. She used to brag about that. And my mom's a hairdresser, so she's around nothing but women. Bragging about her son that's going to school to be a doctor and shit. And then I drop out and I do music. And then you don't make any money with music for mad long.
But you also don't make money as a doctor for mad long. So, you know, same sort of thing.
Yeah. You should have told Grass mom.
I should have been your lawyer.
Yeah, right? You're about to call right now. Like, look, mom.
Yeah. But, Jeff would be like bust on the phone. You know? So, okay. So you're running around with everybody. What is the first time you're just like, yo, pass that check, pass that first like 88 keys check. What's the first time you're like, yo, I think my message is really resonating with people, or like, yo, people really fuck with me just like they fuck with like all these other professionals?
After, it was after the Busta, after the Kanye, after the 88. It was when K Slay started to play my shit. I got down with Black Hand. They were always in my life, like Chaz. Shout out to Chaz, rest in peace. Mm-hmm. He's a legendary dude.
Yes.
After they came into play, and then business wise, because they was always around, but we never did business. So once it became business and we started to actually push music, because even back then DJs weren't trying to play a new artist.
Right.
I had a few freestyles that the same ones that buzzed. Then some DJ were like, "Well, can you put somebody else on it and I'll play it?" I'm like, "Why? It's the same shit. Just fucking me. Just play it. See what happens." And that's why I have to commend K Slay, because he was the first person to just say, "Oh, it's hot. I'm playing it." And he played that shit on the radio, and the city went fucking crazy. The first one he played, that shit, the jails went crazy, the city went crazy. Then he started putting them on his tapes, and that shit started this whole inertia, snowball shit, and it went retarded.
So how did your music get to Slay in the first place?
Somebody that Chaz knew brought it to him, and then Slay heard it and liked it. So I fuck with it. I'm playing it. There was no politics. He's just like, I'm playing the shit. And that shit went crazy. Like, dead ass. The first one he played was crazy. I remember first hearing myself on the radio. It was nuts.
So you waited up and, like, listened to the whole show? Absolutely.
Yeah, like, Wednesday night, High 97.
He played that shit, and me and my hood, my niggas is outside, car, door open. That shit played. It felt surreal. I'm like, oh, shit. I'm on the fuck. Dead ass.
For real.
Life-changing. When you first hear your voice on the radio, it's like, this is really happening. But you know, it's funny. It was like a 4-minute freestyle. The first 2 minutes, I felt nothing because I'm nuts. So I was empty, just like, oh shit, I'm on the radio. And then towards the end of the shit, I was starting to feel like, oh shit, I'm on the radio.
Yeah, but it's also like, you know, a lot of competing emotions. You know.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
but that's your first time freestyling on the radio.
That's the first time of my voice being heard on the radio.
Yeah, but when you're up there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you recorded it at High 97, right?
Nah, I recorded it in the studio. Sent it a freestyle.
Got it.
My first time I got on radio was like college radio. I went with Kanye and Killer Touch. You know Killer Touch?
Yeah, of course.
That's the homie. Yeah, he brought me and Kanye to some college radio, and we was going crazy up there. And then when I started to go to radio with Slay, I brought Kanye there too, to High 97, to freestyle and shit. He actually freestyled, the fuck is that? The Gold Digger record.
Really?
Yeah, back then.
That's wild.
I brought him up there, yeah. Kanye's a rapping ass dude too.
No, for real.
Don't get it confused. Like, when his jaw was wired, and he couldn't even talk, he would still call me and mumble 100 bars. Dead ass. Like, yo, listen to this.
And
verse.
You're like, yo, 16's back there.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Dead ass though. He would call and just spit, jaw wired, still rapping new verses to me. Like, he's a rapping ass rapper.
Yeah.
Like, he's a rapper. Dead ass.
How about when Kanye, do you remember when he did the remix for Can't Tell Me Nothing?
Mm-hmm.
And he was just like, he referenced K-Slay, and he was like, because K-Slayed him, you know?
Oh, yeah.
That
See?
Was fire.
He's on his sheep. He's on his shit.
Yeah.
He's a rapper. I respect the culture. I'm like about this shit, man. Like, I care about the culture and hip hop and where it's going and what it means to people. I just give a fuck.
Yeah.
So, okay, so you're working real hard at getting your music in different places and being on the radio, and you finally get on the radio. Are you also touching stages around the city?
Yeah, I started doing shows and stuff.
Where at?
Mostly colleges and like small clubs, spots in the hood, because at that time I don't know the business. And I didn't really want to be famous in the beginning. I just wanted to fucking rap.
Yeah.
I really just wanted to rap. I didn't want the fame. It took me a while to really say, okay, you gotta be, it comes with it.
Well, in the model of like who? Like who is somebody who was like a rapper that you respected that maybe didn't get his due and like wasn't famous?
Now or then?
Back then.
Well, believe it or not, back then, you know who I was listening to? Royce and M on college radio.
Wow.
They were not famous. Like Stretch and Bobbito type of shit. The underground. I was listening to Royce. I was listening to M. I thought they were fucking like gods. I was listening to the Natural Elements.
So you just...
And they went to my school. Remember Natural Elements?
Yeah.
They went to St. John's too.
So I was
like on this rap underground shit. So that's what I was listening to. They weren't famous at all.
Yeah. So double entendres, triple entendres, like fucking...
All that shit.
As many syllables as you can put in there.
That's where like my style was born. Like listening to them and early Nas and Jay. And I wasn't even into Tupac then. And then later Biggie. But that's what... Those were my influences.
Did you choose sides during the... I mean like you... I mean, Tupac and Biggie, I guess you obviously everybody chose sides, but like during Jay-Z and Nas, did you choose sides?
Because we stopped listening to Nas during that whole time. Yeah. Like, who are we?
Yeah,
like, we're just like, yo, nobody. Fuck Nas. Like, like, not even gonna like, if his shit comes on the radio, like, change it. Like, you know.
Nah, I didn't choose sides. I was in both of them, but I was rooting for Nas because he's from Queens.
Right, right.
Jay influenced my style just as much as Nas. I was into them dudes. Just picking their shit apart and learning how to formulate who I was through listening to them guys. They were great to me, you know what I'm saying? So I didn't really choose sides then. I was just enjoying the music and the battle and the essence of it.
Yeah.
And putting myself in their shoes. Like, if I was him, I'd have done this. Or if I was him, I'd have said this. Because at this time, I'm ready for war. I'm like, somebody say my name, please. I can kill one of you niggas. So I'm like that at this time. So I wasn't really choosing sides.
What other artists were around you back then? Like, in terms of, like, on those shows, like, on different stages?
Wow, who the fuck was around then? Probably nobody that I can remember then. But a little later, like, Cassidy, Papoose.
Mm-hmm. Saigon, maybe?
Saigon was around. All the early lyricists out of New York. Joe Button.
Yep.
Who else?
What was your first time meeting Joe like?
Kind of bad, because at that time, everybody was like, oh, he jacked your style and all this shit. So then we had the little bullshit rivalry, but it wasn't beef. It was just like rap shit. And what made it bad for me is because the label I was at, Sony, they signed me because they felt, oh, he's so original. And then they said, well, if somebody else sounds like him, he's not that original anymore. So if the deal wasn't done already, they wouldn't have signed it. So I was like, I was furious. I'm like, hold on, I lost the deal because of this shit? That's really how they was on it. It was like, well, if somebody else sounds like you, then what do we need you for?
Who signed you at Sony?
Dave McPherson.
And how did that come to be?
I was on fire.
Yeah.
It was me and 50, the hottest in the city at that time.
Queens.
So I was like a bidding war. Like, I was turning down deals and shit. And they just offered me a shitload of money. And I was so young. I was like, $500,000? Great. Where do I sign? They outbid everybody at that time.
Yeah. And so did you, you went to all these meetings. Chaz was with you.
Yeah.
What was were there any close competitors to Sony? Like,
At that time, I think Capitol, but Sony offered the most bread and sold the most dreams. Like, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And they didn't do shit.
Were there any black executives?
Then, no. After Dave McPherson, Eric Nix took that position, I believe. But not that I recall in that building. Plus, remember, I'm new to the business. I didn't know a lot of shit. So I'm learning what's what, who's who, and all of this shit.
Yeah.
So that's my first impression was not black executives. But I don't want to misquote anybody. I just know he was in the hot seat. What is Dave? He's mixed, I think, though.
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm fucking up. Maybe he's white. I don't know. But I know Dave, I think Eric Nix took that position after he got fired. He got fired for some fucking scam shit. So...
And being up there, was that like, you know, a dream come true even before anything else would happen?
Yeah. I mean, like, to get a record deal at that time, especially the size deal I got, was great. And I was on fire at that time. Like, I mean, that was my first taste at being number one at something. Like, at that time, I was the number one guy in the street on the mixtape. It was me and 50. In terms of, like, the mixtape, the lyricist, I was the number one dude. And that's when I learned, like, people talk this number one shit. You don't want to be number one. That shit was real hard to become number one, and what was harder than that to stay number one.
Yeah. Yeah.
People talk this number one shit. Motherfuckers is not built for number one. That shit was fucking difficult.
So that means that every DJ is hitting you up. That means you're doing appearances, spot dates, like
everything. Life is different when you're number one. Yeah. Whatever the fuck it is, I don't care if you're number one racquetball player. Like, shit is different when you're number one, dog. It's just different.
What do your friends think when you're number one?
I mean, everybody's happy. Everybody's on cloud nine. Everybody wants to see you stay.
But you just felt like there were a lot of people like coming at you because you were.
Yeah, I had to outwork myself to stay number one.
Yeah,
because people want that spot. Number one is a real small spot. You know what I'm saying? So it was like I was busting my ass to stay there. You know what I mean? I was working my ass off, but it was worth it.
Yeah.
But it's just work. So I feel I'm built to be number one at whatever the fuck I'm doing.
Yeah.
But in general, human beings in general are not built to be number one at whatever the fuck it is. They just think they are until they get there. You're like, oh, this shit is real. I ain't know it's going to be like this. That's what you asked for. That's what you asked for. You got to really know what you asked for in this life, because you will get that shit.
You get in the building. Do things change?
Yeah, I mean, we got a shitload of bread. That was the first thing. So when you get two things that change. One, when you get a lot of money and you're young, you realize that, at least in urban schools, they don't teach you what to do with money. You don't learn what to do with money. You think you know what to do with money until you actually have a fucking bag in your hand. Oh, I'm going to open a laundromat. I'm going to invest in these stocks. Yeah, but you didn't learn shit about stocks in school. You got to learn how to boss up on your own. Nobody teaches you what to do with money. They teach you how to go fill out an application and go be a fucking employee. They don't teach you how to be a boss. So once you get enough money to hire and be your own boss, you're like, what the fuck do I do now? I had to figure that shit out quick. I made a shitload of mistakes, but I tried. I tried to invest in mutual stocks, and I bought a house. I went and fucking leased this big, stupid Hummer. That was the worst investment ever.
That was a mistake.
Yeah. But I didn't know better, because I'm just figuring this shit out on my own. Nobody's guiding me financially as to what to do with
$100,000.
Yeah. Well, what was Chaz saying at the time? You're saying, go get the truck. Fuck it, get it.
Yeah. Because the money's going to keep coming.
Yeah, so, it feels like a faucet turned on and is never going to stop.
Yeah.
You don't know, and you just... He was learning as well, too. We learned together. But he was, of course, a wise, older person, period. Yeah. But in terms of the music shit, we were both learning, you know what I'm saying, as we went along and shit. So we didn't know what to fucking actually do or what to actually ask for. Like, at that time, you know how many records I wrote for people and did not get my publishing? Because we didn't really know what we were doing. I wrote a shitload of records with people and got jerked crazy.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. You know a record I wrote on that was big as shit? Remember that J-Lo and LL song? That All I Love Is All I Have? Me and another writer wrote that whole shit in my studio. And I was on the record at first. And they took me off the fucking song and put LL on it.
Queens.
Yeah, Queens.
How does that come to be, though? You're aware of where it's going
to
go?
Not at all. I don't know if we knew it was for J-Lo. We were just writing a song to shop, to sell.
Yeah.
So when they took it, what did we know it was for J-Lo? I don't remember. But when I was so focused on the fact they took me off the record, I didn't fight for the fact that I wrote the rest of the shit, too.
Yeah.
So I didn't get any credit. And there's a shitload of records like that at that time I wrote. Or had a hand in writing, and then I didn't get any publishing.
You just take that L?
LL.
Yeah, the double L.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
But do you just think that's the way of the world?
The nature of business is people will pay you to keep you stupid. And people will use you for your energy, and you got to figure that shit out on your own.
Yeah.
Unless somebody gave you something just to...
Well, yeah. They didn't pay me for that particular work, but they just did other shit to pacify it, and it's like, go away.
Yeah, it's sort of like the same thing that happened with like TLC, where it's just like, hey, like, you know, I know you want the check that we've been promising you, but here's a car. And it's like, sure, it's not really the same thing.
Right. Yeah. But I do need to drive somewhere. So.
Yeah. And I'd rather be paid in information any day, because that is what they keep from you. People will use you for your energy and hide information and give you a bag. Fuck your bag. The money is in information. Nobody's trying to share that with you. They'd be like, hey, take this money, though. You know what I'm saying? So... You learn that as you go along, but you have to figure that out on your own. So I figured that out, but way later, years later, I was like, oh, y'all abusing me here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Using me for my energy and resources and influence, and then be like, all right, cool, we good.
In that time, you do understand your talents, though, right?
Definitely.
You understand like how dope you are as a writer, how dope you are as a spitter. You know that like you are the full package.
I knew that.
Do you think that your biggest competition beyond the industry was yourself?
Or? Absolutely. I got in my own way like a motherfucker because I was so sure of myself and so cocky and so confident and so at lack of actual information and understanding the business. I just fucked up a lot of shit, relationships, opportunities. I was just too into the fact that I was capable to do whatever.
So if you get approached to change your product, if someone from the label or someone from management or a friend or someone you just meet who's another writer, they come through and they're like, hey, maybe you should switch it to this. Are you so heady that you're just like, you're headstrong, that you're like, no, we're going to keep it my way, and that held you back? Or do you think you were open to collaboration and maybe that held you back?
I think
you should have been more headstrong.
I think I was more headstrong then and not open to a lot of shit. I felt I knew it all, but I didn't. But and as a matter of fact, I went through that. The label was trying to change my sound and do different things, and they were going too far left of who I was, who I already painted myself to be and who I wanted to go into.
Who did they want you to sound like?
They wanted me to work with like B2K and shit like that. I was like, wow, no. I'm not doing
that. Would have been a very different
that would have been a different graph.
Yeah.
A graph that we were not gonna be fucking with.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm not doing that. Fuck off. So I was like, now I'm the one that's hard to work with. But
you get painted as that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I knew what I wasn't. I didn't know exactly what I was going into, but I damn sure knew what the fuck I wasn't gonna be. I was like, I ain't gonna be that.
Were you afraid that you had to answer to people back home who were just like, yo, you're switching up? Like, what if you did jump on that song and you're like, no, I'm the same person, but I'm just trying to.
Yeah, how close to the block were you when you were on?
I was still in the street. I'm still in the street now. But I wasn't really concerned what anybody would say. I was more concerned what I thought. I thought that shit was trash, and I wasn't fucking with that.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm not doing anything with them dudes. Like, that's not my lane. So I knew my lane. Even when I was trying to be more commercial later on in career, I knew I wanted commercial success as well.
Yeah.
Like, my fans only want me to fucking rap. Spit a million bars, fuck a song. They don't really care. Me as an artist, I wanted to have the commercial success as like a Fab or whatever the fuck. I wanted to be that.
Yeah.
Like, all the way. You know what I'm saying?
Well, because you want something for all the stuff that you're putting out, right? Like, you don't just want the respect. Like, the respect goes a certain, you know, distance.
After a while, you want the fame, the accolades, you want the awards, you want the plaques, you want all the same shit your competitors
magazine
have.
Magazine covers.
Yeah.
All that shit. You're still competing for the same space as these people. You're still staying next to them in a club. You're still in the studio with them. You still want to feel.
And it's like, I've been doing as much as you guys, but you don't get as much for it. So I totally
or more,
that. Yeah.
Because we were kind of like blackballed a little bit at that time.
Right.
So it was like, I'm working three times as hard just to stay as relevant.
Well, when did that, because I know that you felt like 50 had sort of like, because of his relationship with Chaz, like that sort of leveled your career at a certain place.
Kind of, but it's not, I don't, this is my personal opinion. The hood used to say that, oh, he's blackballing y'all, shutting y'all down. I don't know if that's to be true or not, but I know because of the perception, what people thought, what people seen energy-wise between whatever they thought was what caused a lot of disconnect and a lot of the blackballing shit. So they were like, okay, something's going on with 50 and them. I don't know what it is, but we just not fucking with them. Fuck it.
Yeah.
So it's not about 50 doing anything directly. It's just people's perception.
Yeah.
They're like, all right, if there's any kind of issue, we don't understand it. We don't want to understand it. Just fuck them dudes. And that's just kind of what it was.
Did
so
you
I
have
to
any
deal with that.
Relationship with Ja on the other side of things?
Yeah, we was cool. We weren't like super close.
Right.
Like, but we were cool. I worked with Irv and all that shit. You know what I'm saying? So I never worked with Ja, but I knew I did records with Irv and shit. But
yeah. Actually, we didn't even get. So you knew Chaz from just like being around the way. But how did you pick him as your manager?
I think I just grew into that shit, man. Because Chaz was always just close to me. And it just grew into that. He was always doing the music shit. I wasn't chasing music in a real way. I was going to school.
Yeah.
And then when I realized this shit is real, I started to take it serious. Like, after you start making money from it. And, I mean, it's always a dream, but it was just a dream. I was going to school for other things. It grew into that shit. You know what I'm saying? I mean, Chad is always, he was always more like a father figure than a manager.
Yeah.
So we just grew like that. You know what I'm saying? Or
when you were signed to your deal, was there any part of you that was like, I understand the idea of putting free content out there?
I over understood that, which means I wasn't selling shit. I wasn't making money because everything was free. I was just dumping freestyles and doing all this free shit. So we weren't making, we weren't capitalizing financially off the music. But right. I was hot as shit.
Yeah.
Hella content, no money.
Would that mean more live shows though? Like put more content out there, it gets more attention. And then you like, get it
on the back end.
Yeah.
To
yeah.
an extent, yeah. But just the business part, the metadata and the fucking actual publishing and all the things that the intellectual property wise, that where you actually make money in this business, that was happening.
Well, you right. also came everything around at like a weird free. Time because it was like the end of mixtapes into the beginning of the internet.
Yeah.
And so it's like a lot of just like.
Were you heavy on MySpace?
Yeah.
Yeah.
did you ever hear MySpace Jump Off, that song?
Yeah.
So who was in your top eight? Do you remember?
I don't know. My girls and friends. Yeah, I don't
yeah, yeah. Tom.
Yeah, Tom.
Oh, Tom was the homie. Yeah. But let me say this, though. I made a song called MySpace Jump Off, just fucking around.
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't even serious. I made a whole other song on that beat, and I did MySpace Jump Off as a joke. And my man was like, nah, put this one out. Fuck the other one you're doing this beat. Put this out. And I was like, nah, man. That's not even, I'm not even serious. I was playing, but yeah. I understood the power of MySpace, and that shit blew the fuck up.
Well, isn't that like Mims, too? Right? Mims was just like, okay, I'm doing this, you know, this is why I'm hot as like me joking on it. And then yeah. it's like, that becomes your defining.
Right.
Yeah. To the point that art. We saw him perform that three times in a row.
Yeah.
You know,
in how's the day as Vega form?
It was yeah, a huge, huge. Record.
Right. Yeah.
So you're recording, you're putting it out, you're touching stages.
Mm.
You're feeling like the label's not connecting with your vision.
I wasn't signed with the MySpace shit, but I just did that.
No, sure. Sure.
After Sony. I don't fucking remember. Damn. Yeah, guy though.
But in that time too, there's this idea of if you're independent, you're not legit.
Right.
How much did that weigh on your soul?
If
the major doesn't work out, are you like, well, shit, we got to get on another major?
What's crazy is that I was fortunate enough to have a lot of opportunities. Like my first deal was Sony. When that folded, I was not independent for too long, and I ended up going to Rockefeller. No, was it Rockefeller? Yeah, we went to Rockefeller. That folded. Then we went to Def Jam. That folded. Then we went to Koch. So it was independent, but it was still, we still were like in a situation, in a building. So I, because I always worked my ass off.
Yeah.
Always. I always overdid it. Like yeah. whatever the fucking, the standard is, I always went way beyond that shit work-wise. So I always was relevant and always was a part of the curve when it changed or... I was always in it because I worked so fucking hard.
Was you know Lenny saying? S your way into Rockefeller?
Nah, Dame was.
Dame was.
Dame signed us. Yeah, Dame Dash signed us to Rock. Me and Kanye at that time. We went at the same time. I think Nori went with us too at that time. But it was me and Kanye went to the Rock together at that time.
And that means that you were at Baseline?
Yep.
And you were amongst everybody?
Yep. All that shit.
What would you... Where would you fit in? Like, because there's clear like delineations where it's like this is these are the state property hours, mm-hmm. these are like the J hours, you know, these are the diplomat hours. What would you be doing at Baseline?
I didn't get a chance to actually fit in before the deal was over. I wanted to tour with them and mingle with them and all that shit. I didn't get to build really with any of them like that. So and it just and was cliquish, but I was still like. Admiring them dudes, and I didn't get to really get in all the way because the deal didn't last long. Like as soon as we got there, Jay and Dame was having the issues, and the deal went to shit. And then out of loyalty, we left with Dame because Dame brought us there.
Yeah. So Dame Dash Music Group then over at
he created Dame Dash Music Group after Rockefeller.
Yeah.
They split.
Yeah.
And then we felt inclined to ride with Dame, like, you know, fuck it. Dame brought it, said we riding with Dame.
Yeah.
Kanye said, I'm riding with Jay. He's like, Kanye was really into Jay.
Yeah.
Like, as an artist, he felt a loyalty to Jay because he produced those records and he felt those records made his career.
Yeah.
So he felt obligated to ride with Jay.
Yeah.
I felt obligated to ride with Dame. He brought us there. That's just who I was. Like, I always took L's in life because of loyalty. That's just who the fuck I am. Whether it's a good or bad thing, that's how the good Lord wired me. It is what it is. You know what I'm saying? So. And we went to Def Jam
mm-hmm.
through Dame Dash Music Group.
Yeah.
Word.
Who were you working with over there? Shari Bryant?
What's ironic is that in the middle of that deal, Jay-Z took presidency.
Yeah.
So, and Jay's relationship with Dame remained the same. So, that deal got fucked up before we even stepped a foot in the building. Before the ink could dry on that deal, it was over.
and then you're out looking for another deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what was good is that because, like, remember back then they had those big power summits and shit like that in Puerto Rico?
Yep.
So we went to Puerto Rico on a Def Jam budget to perform as a Def Jam artist. So because I performed for the whole fucking country as a Def Jam artist, we, the lawyer made sure they cashed us out. Wow. Like, yeah, you gotta pay them because you just sent him across the fucking country to perform as a Def Jam artist, and he gets back and the deal is gone.
Yeah.
So it was like, okay, now you're not on Def Jam, but you just branded yourself as Def Jam to literally every DJ in the fucking country. So they cashed us out. So we still got a check out of it. So we're not feeling the absence of not having the infrastructure of a label, because I got like $70,000 or some shit. So I took that money, built a studio, became self-sufficient. I bought cameras, studio, everything I needed to be my own engine. I was like, fuck everybody, I'm doing this myself. Taught myself to use fucking Pro Tools, all that shit.
Okay. Being your own everything is very difficult.
Yeah.
Like, writing for yourself, being your own promotional person, your own marketing person, your own, I don't know, maybe your own engineer, right? You're doing everything.
Dead ass.
How do you, who trusts so many other people, who's loyal to so many people, how do you own that and just focus and not give up?
I'm not wired to give up. I don't know how to stop anything. I'm like, it's almost like a gift and a curse, because I can't chill.
I mean,
I can't relax. Like, I'm dead ass.
That's half true, right? Because you gave up on medical school, right? Because you chose another thing.
Yeah, but I didn't give a fuck about that the way I cared about music.
Right.
Like, that was like, I didn't. And most kids that go to college don't know what the fuck they're doing. You're doing what you feel you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
I felt like I was supposed to do this.
Right.
I went and took the internship and working in a hospital as, like, interning in medicine, and I didn't like any of that shit. I was like, I don't want to be here. I'm walking to the hospital holding my breath like a germaphobe and shit. I was like, I can't do this shit forever. I would have been an unhappy doctor, though.
Right,
you know
what
I'm saying? So that's not what, I wasn't passionate about that at all.
Yeah. But if enough people say sorry, doesn't that take, like, a toll on you?
What do you mean?
Like, hey, sorry this deal didn't work out, or sorry that Dame and Jay are going through their stuff, but sorry, like, you know, Def Jam is moving in a different direction.
What's crazy? Nobody says sorry in this business. Nobody gives a fuck. So,
well, no, not
I know what you mean.
Yeah,
So, but you just feel like, you feel
sorry,
you,
like, Sia.
Yeah, exactly. You feel a bit jaded, though. Like, is there a black cloud over me? Like, what the fuck is going on? You get that feeling for sure. But I just never, I always felt it was out of my control. I never felt like it's me failing. It's not my music. It's not my talent. It's not a shortcoming. It's like happenstance.
Totally get that.
So that's how I felt.
Who's the person that you trust in then? That's not you, where you're like, yo, they see it. They can
I was
hear
with Chaz.
It.
Me and Chaz was riding all the way. So I trusted him like a motherfucker. You know what I'm saying? So whether he knew what to do or not in those situations, I trusted him. You know what I mean? And then most times he did. Like, we still learn together, because this is trials. We never got, each step we took, we're taking together. You know what I'm trying to say? So it's not like we know how to be at Def Jam and have the label fall and know what to do like this. Or be a Rockefeller, have a fall, and all that. We have to learn what to do in these situations. We didn't ever experienced it.
Yeah.
But we're still getting money and getting to the next phase and still making moves. You know what I'm saying? And at the same time, I'm still trying to be an artist, still making records, still doing my marketing, still doing my own publicist, engineering, setting my own photo shoots, videos, all of this shit. Like, all this is weighing on me.
Yeah.
But and it's weighing on him too, because every step I'm talking about grinding, like, even like going out to the radio for the whole fucking weekend, he's right next to me.
Yeah.
He's orchestrating this shit. Like, he goes hard. You know what I'm saying? So it was us figuring this shit out.
So then what was the conversation like when you guys did end up parting ways in like 2011-ish?
Hard for me, because it was more like, it wasn't like telling a manager you're walking away. It was like telling a father, like, I'm about to move out. That's what it felt like. You know what I'm saying? He's such a G. He took it real smooth. I think he might have saw it coming. But at that time, like, I was so down. Like, I was all the way in the street hustling. Still had records and shit on the radio. Wasn't making any music money. Just lost the house that I bought for my family. Like, lost the shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, we had to leave that house and give it up because we couldn't afford it. It was way out of my price range, because my family convinced me, pressured me, like, don't you think you're gonna make it? Don't you think you're gonna be famous? Get this house. It was like this fucking $1 million house. I'm like, this is like a Jay-Z level house. I don't need to be here.
Yeah.
It was way out of my fucking mortgage, without the tax included, was like $7,700 a month. The fucking lawn was $300 a month. I was like, I got $300 lawn to maintain. and then the roof is this. It was so expensive, and it was way too much for me to maintain that and invest in my career.
Yeah.
So we lose the shit. So technically, we're homeless at my different family's house. I got twins, issue with baby mother. All of this shit's happening at the same time. And I said, yo, I got to try something different. I have to just change the energy in my life right now. First reset on everything. Whoever I was dating, I broke up with her. I had to go my own way with him. I had to try everything over. Cause I was like, whatever I'm doing now in life, I am miserably failing at every aspect of it.
Yeah.
Everything was falling apart.
Well, but then you also, like, you have these, like, things that make you keep going forward, right? That keep propelling you, right? Like, you, even, like, small things. Like, somebody like Shia LaBeouf mentioning you on late night TV.
Crazy.
Or, like, you know, when Drake, you know, calls you. Like, stuff like that, where it's just, like... And that's around that time, I imagine, because 2011 was when he was... Or maybe a little bit before, I guess.
Might have been before.
Yeah. But, like...
Maybe it was the same time.
But, like, it's... Might be right. It's, like, these small, like, signifiers that are just, like...
That's
like
the
you're
thing.
Doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, I know that I'm talented. I know there's an audience out there. I know if I keep going, then, like, I can keep doing this.
Mm.
And then you have to, you know, you have to also realize that there's all these, like, shitty things that are happening around you.
Yeah.
And it's not your fault that the Def Jam thing didn't work out. And it's not your fault that the Rockefeller thing didn't work out.
Right.
Like, you have to understand that in that moment, right?
And I kind of did, but I still... the kind of person I am, I'm always going to blame myself regardless. So I said, okay, whatever the issue is, maybe you're the common denominator. I don't fucking know, but I just knew I had to make a change. It had to be drastic.
Yeah.
So I said, I got to press reset on everything and try this shit again. Because at that point, technically, I'm homeless at this point. Like,
right.
Mom Dukes is on the floor, on the couch. Kids are on the floor. Baby mother's on the floor. Like, we're all over the fucking place. This shit is not successful. And I'm trapping a million miles a minute. I remember being in VA with all kind of shit, like, what the fuck am I doing here? That was, like, a defining moment for me, too. I was out there, and I remember, like, praying, like, what am I doing in the trap? I got a song on the radio. I'm out here with everything. And I done drove from New York to VA with the shit, and I'm like, I said, God, if you get me out of this, I swear I'll just figure out something different.
So a little change from the kid who was, you know, shooting, thinking that there's going to be no consequences at 18.
Now it's all consequences.
Now it's all consequences.
Right.
But that's and also like what comes with fatherhood problems.
For sure. I have, yeah, twins yep. in the crib, a song at radio, and I'm running around with every drug you can think of. I'm like, nah, you're doing a lot wrong, bro. And it's to the point where I'm hiding that too, because I was too ashamed to even tell people I was still in the street, because I'm supposed to be this star in my hood.
Right.
I'm still going outside and still famous in the hood. Every step, it's like, oh shit, it's Graf, what up, what up? Dude's still taking pictures, autographs and shit. Meanwhile, I'm going through all this other shit.
Yeah.
I'm like, nah, I got to figure this shit out. So I had to reset everything. Everything that I could possibly reset, I just had to do it and figure out, take 10 steps back, take 10 steps forward. I had to.
Did you self-manage or did you find somebody else to come in to fill that role?
Well, I kind of self-managed, and I have my partner, Max Wayne, who's still here. He was there from the beginning. So he kind of learned under Chaz how to be the best manager he could be. You know what I'm trying to say? We learned together every step of the way, even to this day. We don't know it all still. We're still learning. Y'all might could look at my career and see holes in it and be like, we're still learning.
Well, but also,
still students.
I look at your career and I think, like, the resilience, like, is super impressive. The fact that, like, so you re-team up with Green Lantern.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you cap off the trilogy that you didn't imagine was going to be a trilogy.
Deadass.
You have, I imagine through him, you get Benny and Conway on there.
Nah, I already...
You already had those relationships?
Yeah, that remember that.
Oh, right, you were
that,
at the show.
I was, yeah, I, yeah. We already had the song. Me and Benny already had that song done.
Yeah.
Was I performing it? He brought me on his set to perform a song a few times. I don't know if it was one of those, I don't remember what show it was, but we were already rocking out.
Yeah. Well, how did you link up, I mean, so how did you get in with all of Griselda?
I always gravitate towards the street dudes. We identify with each other. So I got cool with them early. When they were first, I met them on tour with Royce. I went on Royce's yep. tour.
How wild is that, by the way?
Crazy.
Like, to grow up, like, just idolizing the yeah. way that he flows.
Royce is, like, my favorite dude. So to be on the tour, and I was the only one on, it's not like it was a bunch of artists, just me and him on the road doing the whole fucking country. For me, that's amazing. That was, like, a big milestone for me.
Yeah.
And he's one of the only rappers, if not the only one, who ever invited me on a tour.
Wow.
Like, I've been on one other tour previously, and I was in the beginning of my career with Lyricist Lounge and Scarface, which is amazing too.
I bet.
Straight out of college, straight out the hood. I was wildin'. Straight up.
Yeah.
Wildin'. But that was my first tour. And no other rapper ever invited me on a tour. And then he brought me on his tour. So I learned a lot just watching him, how he works, how he moves, and learn how to tour. And learn what not to do, too. I went on tour with, like, 8 dudes. That shit is expensive.
Yeah.
I can show you in receipts. It cost me about 50 racks in receipts. I brought 8 dudes. Never mind the cash outside. In receipts, it was, like, 50 racks that we spent. I was like, oh, no. I got to figure this shit out.
There can't even be 8 jobs for them to do.
Yeah, well, you know what's funny? One was a driver. Yeah. One was a cameraman. Uh-huh. One is a DJ. One is a manager. That's 4 dudes right there.
Yeah.
The other two were artists, and they manned my merch.
Oh my god.
So I was 8th person, so 7 dudes.
Yeah.
So everybody was busy as fuck, but it was expensive to do that.
Yeah.
Like, you have to be at a certain level to bring 8 motherfuckers around the United States.
Right. Yeah.
Trust me.
Somebody around here can multitask, you know? Like,
hell yes. I learned that the hard way, because everybody got to eat. You need multiple hotel rooms.
Maybe that somebody's you.
Yeah. I'm going, like, I'll starve. Fuck it. Give me rice cakes.
But I guess, you know, relationships must, I mean, we know this for a fact, relationships mean everything in this business.
Yeah, absolutely.
That must have paid off for you through the years, right?
Yeah, Royce is a homie now, man. Like, I fuck with Royce.
Yeah, also heavy. Bun.
Bun, yeah.
Bun is my big bro.
I'm saying, same here. And
Bun is on every project I ever dropped. I don't know if people realize that. Bun is on every
fucking graph project. Yeah, I was going through and I was like, Bun.
And we got like 20 songs.
Yeah. And, you know, for good reason, you returned the favor on that Static project.
Absolutely.
So that was a blessing. I don't know if you know this, but I believe we were standing next to each other in that session.
That's a fact, yeah.
When Joe was there, when Fat Joe shows up and just like destroyed the booth and that then was like, I'm going to leave. Nope. I'm going to do a hook too. And we're all in there and like Michi from Flatbush Zombies. And we're all just sort of just like, what is this moment to live?
Wasn't that a crazy ass fucking moment though? Let's reflect on that for 2 seconds.
It was insane.
That was like, to me, like the hip hop version of Summer Jam. That shit was fucking crazy.
So
wait, the hip hop version of Summer Jam?
Like extra hip hop. Oh, okay. Like underground niche ass hip hop version of Summer Jam. Yeah, like that was like crazy.
It was more parking lot than the parking lot, you know?
Yeah, like, there you go. Yeah, that's the way to say it. Yeah.
Yo, so I went down there just to like take it all in, right?
Mm.
So I didn't want to be on the title cameras and all that, right? Because they were live streaming it. And I...
Right, you're not about the fame.
Nah.
You know?
Yeah. just $2,000 sweaters. So I was in the actual, like, recording room, right? Not, like, the green room, not the booth, but, like, the in-between room. And it's me and, like, Queenie. And I'm just
Bun's wife.
Yeah, I'm just sort of standing, you know, behind the door or whatever. And in walks Fat Joe, who was just watching on the live stream. And he sits down and he writes longhand his whole verse as the beats are just on loop, and I'm sitting there and I was just like, what the fuck am I experiencing right now, right? And like, he's like, we don't say anything to each other, we don't know each other at the time. That was the first time actually meeting in person that night. And so he just looks behind and he goes, what's a better word for wall? And I'm just like, oh shit, like this right here is my moment.
It's your moment.
Yeah. And so I'm like, and for whatever reason, maybe I was just caught up, but I was just like, drywall. And he was like, probably something that doesn't rhyme. I was like, fuck. Right? And someone else walked in and they were just like,
Sheetrock.
Sheetrock. And I was like, God damn it, Sheetrock. Like, that's exactly right. Anyway, blew my moment then. But, and we're cool now, which is great. Well, Joe and I are cool. Yeah.
Yeah. I've never met Joe.
Yeah. So every time we're together and Jeff's just like,
I'm trying to
get into the conversation. It's never a good time to introduce them.
But Joe and Eric are like best friends, and then there's also me, who looks like the creep, like, you know, 3 feet behind. He's like, hi.
Hey, what's up?
Yeah. No, but Joe tore it down, and it was so dope because it was organic.
That's dope.
And he just pulled up, and he wrote, and, you know, just like everyone was doing that night. DZA and Method Man and...
fucking crazy.
Just the list was long and impressive and so much fun because... It's in a small space. It's like the Baseline days, you know? Yeah. It's like everyone's in, not emailing, not like doing it. It's just making
real
it
deal.
There in 11 hours or whatever it was. Mm. And you were there.
Yeah.
So you and Bun are like super tight.
Definitely.
How did you guys first cross paths?
I met Bun probably through Scarface, I think. Because Scarface wanted to sign me in the beginning too. Back then when I signed with Sony, Scarface offered me the first deal. But back then, the signing to independence wasn't the wave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And these companies are throwing so much money at me, and I was so young and didn't know what I know now. Then I would have took the Scarface deal 10 times over any amount that any label would have gave me, because he said it like, listen, I can't offer them what what Sony's going to offer him, but I can tow him through the whole South and break him out there. I didn't know what that meant back then. Imagine a New York dude like me touring with Scarface in like 2003, 4.
I would have been out of here.
But to be fair, it's easy to say that now, right?
Yeah,
back
I didn't
then,
know.
It's just like, no, New York, like, no, we're it.
Yeah.
Right?
I didn't know.
You're fire out in New York, right? Like, you're running New York.
Yeah, but then also, like...
But it's a Scarface,
like,
though.
No, it would have been, like, tough crowds, though. Because, like...
Nah, because we did a few shows on the tour, and it was all good. Like, if Scarface co-signs you, motherfuckers is like, whatever he says, we ride him with that. Anywhere in the country.
I think it would have set you apart. I'll say that.
Yeah.
Because, like, I think that you came up at a time where, again, New York was popping. And there were a lot of New York guys.
Mm. Yeah, Papoose is signing with Slay.
Yep.
But nah, but what you're missing is if Scarface brings you on the road, show.
I'm following you.
Listen to this dude.
Yeah.
The crowd will be like, all right, let's go. You got him. Because any city he did that in, like, all right, I'm bringing Graf. He's standing there saying, listen to this.
Right.
And
I see what he was thinking, attention. By the way, in terms of like Wordsmith. Like, yeah.
Bro,
yeah.
I would have been out here. Remember how Nelly came out and went diamond because he did all these tertiary markets and had the whole country in the palm of his hand?
Yeah.
I would have been an East Coast dude with that same kind of power.
Well,
I understood what that meant
real
back
quick.
Then. That's what he was saying, but I didn't get it.
Over the course of your career, like New York's your number one market, but what's like your second or third that might be surprising? You're just like, yo, my shit rings off in like Memphis or like, you know.
DC and London.
DC and London.
Yeah, I went to London. I was like fucking Jigga Man out there. It's fucking amazing. I was like, oh shit. I'm talking about dudes running out the store where they work. Yo, bruv, it's fucking rough, bruv. It was serious.
That's dope.
London, they give a fuck about bars. Heavy. Shout out to London. Shout out to the UK.
Japan does too.
Oh, Japan too. I went to Japan. It was retarded.
Do you do?
Retarded in Japan. I did 2 days in Japan with Dame, as a matter of fact. That shit was crazy.
What is it like traveling through Japan with Dame and Dash?
That's another funny story. He gave me two edibles, right? Cookies. And said, don't eat both of these. I was like, I got this, nigga.
Ooh.
I got this, nigga. You wild. I got this. I ate both of them shits.
Good. Another smart decision.
Shout out to 15, your medical, you know.
15 hours later, I was high as fuck.
Oh, no.
I couldn't even function. No. As soon as he was high, too.
You were like, I'm in Japan?
You sure?
It's Chinatown?
I was out of my mind still. He was high, too. As soon as we landed, it's mad cameras in our face, interviews and shit. We mumbled.
Well, you took it on the plane?
We took it and then got on the plane.
Yeah.
Like JFK, we just bust that shit down, got on the plane.
Yeah. Smart.
Yeah.
Slept the whole flight like a baby.
As soon as I landed,
I was like, oh, I'm high as fuck. I was high as fuck in Japan. Yeah. But he was too, though. We neither one of us could figure out a goddamn thing. And we walked right into the cameras and interviews and shit. I was like, oh, damn. I'm glad y'all speak English. I don't know what the fuck I'm saying. I was mumbling a bunch of nonsense. I promise you. So yeah, that was my experience flying to Japan with Dame Dash.
So this new project has super heavy hitters on it.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of bars and a lot of storytelling and a lot of fire.
Thank you.
I think that there's a lot of it's cool now. The pendulum swings, right?
Right.
And it's cool now to spit, you know? Or it's always been cool, but I'm saying like it's more accepted in the larger, you know, listening community.
Right.
Because it's, you know, for example, look at Griselda, right?
Right.
Like they're winning off bars. You come out now, you never, even though you might have, you know, had label pressure to change your sound, you never changed. You're always you.
No.
You went through a lot of situations. You've always remained the same. Do you feel like the tide is turning? Do you feel like a lot of good energy is around this project right now?
When I first came out, hip hop and bars were in style and I was having fun. A couple years after that, New York lost its identity. Nobody gave a fuck about hip hop. And it was, for me, it was miserable. This shit felt like a fucking job. I was not having fun. This is the first time in my career since the beginning that I'm actually having fun with the business. The fact that hip hop and bars are in style, I am fucking ecstatic. I am happy I could shed a tear. I am happy as shit.
Everything's hitting at the same time.
Bro.
Yeah. The timing feels so right.
Hip hop is in style again. And I happen to know how to rap.
Yeah.
This shit is amazing. I have never, I am on cloud nine. You understand? Like, business wise, like, I never saw a way to really make, for me, real money with music, hip hop until now.
Oh, and indie is in style too, by the way.
Bro, this shit is amazing. I'm like, the clouds open up. This shit is, I am elated. I am very happy. Yo, like, I'm smiling every day. I'm like, oh, I could just rap. I don't got to do none of this extra ass shit and all this politics in my way. All I have to do is just rap and make music. Ah.
Yo, no, but, bro, okay, looking back now,
it's different.
What do you think about that Graf who is in Virginia? That Graf who didn't have a house anymore? That Graf who, you know, felt the pressure to go walk, you know, the block and people recognize him for a certain thing, but know that there's like darker shit, you know, just around the corner.
Right.
Like, what do you think about that time?
I think, I guess I had to go through that to become the me now. Like, I'm super resilient. I will never quit at anything I want to do. I will always tell people, whatever you dream of, do it. Because you're not going to have a happy life without it. You're going to be 40, 50, 60, doing whatever the fuck you felt you had to do and be miserable as fuck. And that same energy is going to get passed on to your kids and your wife and the people around you. And like, nah, do what you want to do. Or do it till you fail at it. Who gives a fuck? Do what you want to do. Because it's your life. You live it once. You know what I'm saying? And I lost a lot. And I made it back. Only thing you really lose is time. That money ain't about shit. Money it doesn't mean anything. It's a different color in every fucking country. It means nothing. You got to do what you want to do. Whatever you feel is fulfilling to you. Do that shit. That's all that fucking matters. Mm-hmm. And I learned that through all those things. You know what I'm saying? Like, get what you want out of this life. Don't feel obligated to be trapped in any situation, because you're not. You can fuck your whole life up doing it for other people. Because I always put other people first. I can't even help it. But at some time, you have to say, let me check on my glass of water. Is it half empty? Is it half full? Is it fucking empty? Because if your glass is fucking empty, you can't pour into somebody else's. And people are like, think about you on an airplane. They say, put your mask on first, then take care of the child. Because you'll put the child's mask on first and fucking die.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know what I'm saying? So you have to take care of yourself and really do what fills your glass up. And I had to learn that through all those trials and tribulations. Or,
well, who do you do this for?
I would say my family and my friends, people that I care about. Kids, moms, my friends, my people that are close to me.
Do you do it for Queens?
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Queens and New York City, definitely. They on my back.
Yeah.
I have to do it for the borough and for my city. Like, I feel what I mean to the city is important. I'm like the last one of this from the era and of the dying breed of hip hop, because people didn't give a fuck about bars for like a decade here. Like, the new rappers that grew up here, they grew up on Atlanta music in New York. It's not their fault. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you grew up and you're like 25 now and you rap, I'm not expecting you to sound like Nas or Jay-Z or Royce, because you grew up on Atlanta music in New York City. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, what else would your influences be? New York lost identity until a few years ago. We just started rapping again. I've been rapping the whole fucking time. You know what I'm saying? But the city lost its identity mainstream-wise. The streets was always the same, but we were getting ignored.
Yeah.
There were times, career-wise, where all us New York rappers that like weren't at the forefront but like bust our ass out here would be in a club with other superstars from other cities, let's say like a Ross or a Meek or whoever, different cities, and the DJs would shout out the out of towners more than us, and I was mad as fuck, like, bro, we here, you wildin'. Like, if you're a DJ, like, if I'm in Atlanta or LA or Florida or Tennessee, them DJs in that city gonna make sure that I know where the fuck I'm at. They're going to make sure they rep their artists. They play the music. They're going to be dropping bombs. They're going to make sure that us out-of-towners know where the fuck we're at.
Yeah.
When we lost our identity here, we were the only city that were embracing out-of-towners more than our own. And I was fucking livid.
Well, especially because, you know, those DJs were the same guys who helped build your career. And so then it's just like, oh, now you're in the clubs.
They kind of didn't. My shit was made in the street. They didn't really support. Only one on the radio that really support was Slay.
Well, I was thinking more mixtapes.
Nah, this is like the mainstream guys who run a nightlife. This is they mainstream. Mm-hmm. They were more concerned with playing and leaning towards the out-of-towners rather than embracing their own. So if you were from out of town, you felt you definitely were bigger than the artists here, because the DJs in the system here is making sure of that.
What was your relationship like with Flex?
It's cool. He don't really, I mean, he supports a little bit, you know what I'm trying to say? But he doesn't embrace it to the point where it's like, I'm putting Graf on the forefront.
Right.
Definitely not. He ain't doing that. I ain't even do his mixtape series yet, the freestyle shit.
Yeah.
Every time he does it, I'm like, don't skip me. Yeah. You had the same artist like three or four times already. I'm like, all right, fuck it, I guess, whatever. Maybe. I don't know.
Can you still go for 50 bars like you did at Kanye's place?
I'm going to go for 100 bars at Flex. But I'm like, Flex, what you doing, nigga? Like, all right, whatever.
Listen, if you want to do it right now.
Yeah. Just
Eric would beatbox.
Yeah. I'll be dope, actually.
Yeah. But it's fine. You would be great. That would not be. Sorry. But it's very kind of you.
Yeah.
But nah, but I care about New York and hip-hop here and what it means to the world. This is New York City. I got to embrace that. Yeah. I was mad. I ain't gonna front. But I never went out and attacked the DJs or said anything negative. Because some DJs do care about the culture and do care about New York City. Some of them didn't.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And the ones that did, more power to you. I definitely commend you and tip my hat to you.
Yeah.
Clue plays New York radio. Yeah. New York fucking, even though he ain't playing my records all day, but he'll fucking play Locks and a bunch of New York shit all day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Flex just started playing New York shit again, which is great.
Because
he helped. Remember when Trinidad James said he came to New York and I sound like Atlanta?
Yep.
Everybody got mad. Yep. Around that time, yeah. New York put their foot down. I was like, fuck that. We embracing New York again. And then Flex got on his shit.
Yeah.
So I'm just glad they back on their shit.
Because
we was off the fucking reservation for like a decade.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it's New York, man.
Yeah.
Fuck that. Fuck that. It's New York.
Well, I have one more question, which is, as a almost medical professional, what can you advise people to do for the coronavirus?
Die.
Yeah, there you go. Smart. No. Yeah.
That's the way to go.
Yeah. Well, Graf, congratulations on this new project.
Thank you.
Congratulations on making it through a career where you had to make a lot of tough calls, you know? But listen, out of all those tough calls, the greatest call was Busta Rhymes to your mom.
So. That was dope.
Yo, thanks so much for coming through.
Nah, thanks for having me, man. This is dope.
No doubt. Appreciate you. Word. Thanks, everyone, for listening to this new episode of Waste Time with It's The Real Jeff. People want to find out more about us. I'm Eric with the curly hair. You are Jeff with the glasses. Together, we are It's The Real, no apostrophe, no spaces. If people want to find out more about this podcast, it's called A Waste of Time with It's The Real. If people want to find out more about what's going on with us, Jeff, where can they go?
You can always go to itsthereal.com, itsthereal.com. You can go and follow us on all social media platforms, but the only two that really matter are twitter.com/itsthereal and also Instagram @itsthereal.
How about YouTube?
youtube.com/itsthereal. Is YouTube a
social media platform?
I mean, it's a net. Yeah, I guess it's a platform.
I don't know.
Doesn't seem like.
Go support us there.
Yeah, go follow us. Whatever.
How about Patreon, Jeff?
Get us that $30. Patreon.com/itsthereal. I do want to shout out everybody who supported us over there. I think that it matters, not just the producers, but everybody who has been supporting us.
Absolutely agree, and now is the time to do it.
I want to shout out Dan Rosenthal, our brother.
Hey.
He's the only one.
Okay.
Also, Ian Lutz, Amir Bessie, Joseph Scott, Brian Kraft, Ramon M., Sean, Moba Danger, that's Lucian, Jason Johnson, Jamal Long, Ian Denkwa, Kwesi Yankson, Matt Tompkins, William Cooney, Michael Sanchez, Bernard Freeman, that's Bun B,
shout out to
Alicia
Bun.
Solomon, Ain't No Jigga,
yeah,
Harold Little, Julia Rubin, Anthony Cruz, Dante B, John Fry, the podcast guy, Zion Addisem, Dang Thokboom, Ray Rodriguez, Connor Meager, Jimmy Brandley, Rashida, Danny DeBerry, Rory from the Joe Budden Podcast, Robert Dill, Dave Dunn, DJ Cass, Shiv Pandya,
shout out to Shiv,
Joss Biggins, who I owe an email to, Hunter Rangasan, MTS Chudri, Daniel, Steve Whitehurst, Parth Patel, Landon Becker Parton, Forge, Esther Bloom, Frederick Sieber Leitner, Corey Ball, Matt Fastow, Sputch, Felipe Morgado, Eric Guerra, Brian Hasty, Shale Thacker, Kaz, Matt Migliarelli, Rafael Castaneda, Rachel McCoy, Josh Gonzalez, David, James Ledley, Shannon Johnson, Travis Davis, Brandon Colin, Josh Adams, there's a lot of people, Brian Reddy,
Mr. Reddy Art Stud,
Christopher Williams, Kevin, Benjamin Jacobs, Mitchell Boyd, Ahmed Oda, Sanjay, Lee Kaplan, Reggie Bullock, Daniel Tutopoli, Sean Austin, and Kaylin motherfucking Summers.
Shout out to all of you guys. Thank you sincerely for rocking with us week in and week out. Jeff, as always, not for real, for real.
Sure.
See you guys next week.